Chen fit through the doorway first, and they saw him disappear downward. Rock went next, the Black Warrior right behind. Below, about 8 feet down, was a war elephant with Chen sitting on its neck. Rock landed on both feet on the bull's back, Rahala right behind him. The war beast seemed to know exactly what was going on and took off like a racehorse on steroids. Dozens of guards appeared on the pyramid's second and third levels. Bullets whizzed all around them, a few slamming into the light armor of the animal, which stopped the shots from entering even the outer edge of the thick hide. Then, from the higher sections, two Qual wielders, who had a view of the fleeing prisoners, began sending out their red levitation beams. Wherever they struck, whole craters suddenly appeared as the desert particles were sucked up in multi-ton loads and then slammed down again toward the elephant. But this bull had been trained to dodge and run, never head in a straight line when attacking or being attacked. From the pyramids, as the Amun troops tried to get a beat on the thing, it looked as if it were drunk or something, moving around like that, which made it almost impossible to get a good sighting. And at the speed it was moving, the nuke-mutated elephant bull was a half mile away from the pyramid within the first 65 seconds. A full mile in another 80 seconds.
The rock crystals! We've got to get them! They're the counterforce to the core!
Kirov hit them! I saw his men take a shroud-wrapped thing off. I can guess its new location, but maybe we shouldn't go there now. I mean, just look behind you!
Roxen turned, as did Rahala, both holding onto the elephant's platform for dear life. It looked as if an army was pouring out of the main pyramid, and the smaller ones around it as well.
Oh, shit!
From the numbers that were gathering, thousands of rushing ants from where Roxen was sitting, it looked as if the whole population of Northern Africa was getting ready to come after them. They had no other choice than to run. Afternoon turned to dusk, and night fell with the speed of an executioner's descending sword. Chen had busted their asses out of Kilov's bone-smashing hellhole, but none of them had any illusions that they were more than a cat's whisker away from pulpy termination. The escapees rushed on through the endless miles of sand for 2 hours. Then ahead, Rock suddenly saw the Great Nile flowing by, stretching a good mile across. The air was filled with precious moisture, which made the war bull flap its trunk around a few times. It wanted to drink after exerting so much energy, after building up so much heat from its pumping muscles. It tore right through a grove of low palm trees, not looking particularly hard where it was going, snapping dozens of them right over like toothpicks.
Whoa! Stop it! Hold on! Damn it! Stop! Sorry, but I think we're going to...
The elephant covered itself with a wet, muddy stuff, whipping up its trunk filled with water and spraying it out. The three free fighters hung on, not sure what the hell was happening. The bull doused itself and the men with trunkfuls of cooling river water and drank long and deep. All in all, it put on quite a dramatic performance.
What the hell is he doing? We're still running away here.
I think he just wanted to cool off.
He knows what he's doing better than we do. Otherwise, he'd just blow out his whole system from the heat generated by all this running.
And Rahala's observation was correct. For after not more than 3 minutes, the elephant emerged from the water dripping wet. It seemed to be ready to carry out further commands as it stood there dripping, almost motionless, letting the slight wind sweep over its huge body as the water evaporated, creating a cooling effect, an organic air conditioner.
I hear the stones off in the distance.
Okay, if he wants to cool off, let him. Let's head downriver and lose them, and find our own army.
Chen patted the beast on the back of its head. It raised its great skull up and down as if nodding yes. Roxen couldn't help but continue to hope they would find some refuge at the end of this wild ride. A lifelong elephant rider, no doubt, would have batted an eyelash at the bouncing up and down. But with the free fighters, who weren't quite used to the ride, their legs and butts were sore, as if they'd been bouncing on porcupine quills. Everything below the waist felt as if it were on fire to Roxen. It took another half hour or so for them to reach the rear defensive units of Tutankhamun's slowly moving army. They related the bad news to the army's outpost men, who were sitting atop four heavily armored elephants, and were told the general was 3 miles ahead at the lead of the army. They shot off alongside the outpost men's beasts and soon found the main body of the army. The elephants were heavy laden, their packs loaded down with all the various forms of smaller lasers that the fighters possessed. Women and children rode in the center, the most protected part of the migration.
Roxan, Rahala, you are safe. I am most pleased to see you two.
Tutankhamun rode in the very forefront of the army, with his top 10 generals on elephants around him, so they could confer and make plans while in motion.
But where is Sesostris?
I'm afraid that Sesostris is dead.
Chen brought their war bull to an even pace alongside the general.
And Kilov has all the goddamn sticks now. The Quol and the Ra.
Then we are doomed. All our people. You as well. Probably the whole planet within another year or two. Everything will be gone. We have failed. Failed ourselves. And failed the living gods.
Not so fast, Chief. Let's see if we can't have a little powwow and figure this whole fucking thing out.
Rock jumped up and stepped over until he was on the edge of his elephant, and suddenly leaped out, jumping across a good 6 feet to the side of Tutankhamun's bull. Two of Tutankhamun's guards, armed with long razor-edged swords, looked a little nervous, as there had been assassination attempts over the years. But Roxan smiled and raised his hands to show he had nothing bad in mind. He sat down quickly in the extra-wide battle station that was the Pharaoh's.
Do you have a map?
Yes, I was just going over it.
The general pointed to a spread-out sheet of papyrus in the middle of his finely woven rug. The paper had its own glow, as the tomb did.
You see, we're here, by the Nile.
I see. And if we're here, there, back about there, I would estimate about 20 miles off, moving at approximately 12 miles an hour. Hopefully not this way. They might not be aware of us. Maybe.
Roxan looked at the map, getting a sense of where they were, the scale of the things. If only he had done this before.
We can travel maybe another 100 miles, and then it will become much slower for the bulls as they are heavy burdened. Plus, there are thick, pointed rocks everywhere along the riverbanks. Ordinarily, the bulls can handle rocks and stones, but these are known as the spear stones because of their extremely sharp tips. It gets worse the farther you get in. I want to get there and maybe have a few days to figure out some strategy. It is a defendable area.
Roxan spied a large shape on the map, jutting right across the river.
What's this here?
The Aswan Dam, an immense dam made of concrete thicker than the Great Pyramid. It was built before the Great Nuke War.
Does it still work? I mean, hold water, whatever, behind it?
Yes, much water. A vast Nile-fed lake. Often my people have fished from the reservoir of water above it. We call it Dumankar. I have floated on its placid surface in better days. Yes, it is filled with water, billions upon countless billions of gallons.
Then I'm getting a crazy idea.
Well, let me hear it. My generals and I haven't been coming up with anything. Anything that would really stop them. After the reports of their ability to kill such huge numbers of men and even war bulls so easily, I can't pretend that we can use our usual tactics. They would be useless.
That's exactly it, Your Greatness. We can't face them directly. As powerful as your lasers are, they're just no match for falling mountains. What if somehow we could lure them into this lower valley below the Aswan Dam? And then, using the war bull's combined laser power, crack open the dam and send all that water down on the Kelovian forces, like old Moses in the Red Sea. We'll smack it down on them like a tidal wave. They have rocks, we have water.
To be honest, I don't know if that's the best idea or the worst I've heard yet. Yes, I suppose all our lasers might break the shell of concrete that holds back the water. It's all maybe possible, I would imagine, but...
Yeah, I know, but I feel the same way. We know for sure what's gonna happen if we don't get something spectacular to match their firepower. It's like, as far as I can see, we've got nothing to lose.
I agree. Oh, great Isis, send me a sign. Tell us of your wishes.
As Roxanne looked on, and from their elephant, Chen and Rahala as well, a single meteor streaked suddenly across the sky, much brighter than the fading pinpoints of the stars. It rode on for a full 4 seconds, streaking blue and white, and then red. Then it was gone.
Red, white, blue. Like your flag. The gods have spoken.
Everybody, listen to me!
The entire army slowed and stopped, turning towards their leader. They saw not a man beaten by superior forces, but a man with great pride and hope for the future. A man with a fire in his belly.
To Aswan, our entire army, where the final battle of Egypt will be fought, one way or another, whether we live or die, whether we win or not, we are fighting the holy war. The war of Isis and Ra!
The war bulls began moving forward at increased speed, so that within minutes they were traveling at full gallop, heading straight for the Aswan, where everything would end, one way or another. It was a tremendous strategic question, how best to blow the damn thing up, and how to lure Kilof and his forces right into the path of the great wave that would come down the lower Aswan Valley from the burst Aswan Dam, if it did burst, and how to survive it all themselves. Rock, Tutankhamun, Chen, Rahala, and all 10 of the Pharaoh's generals all shouted ideas and battle plans back and forth, until at last, as they came to within about 10 miles of the dam, they all agreed. They saw it now, as they came around a curve in the river, rising like some man-made mountain ahead, curving all the way across the mile-wide river, storing up its immense liquid power on the other side of titanic concrete walls. Rock and his men, and about a third of the elephants, headed across the other side of the river, via the wide road on the top of the dam. Tutankhamun led the other two-thirds of the army along the side they were on. Another 100 of the fastest war bulls, ridden by volunteer relatives of Sesostris, were the bait to pull the army of Amun straight into the lower Aswan Valley, where they would be in the path of the bursting tidal wave. Or so it went on paper. Roxan was glad to be back on Kral. The beast had made its way back across the desert, following some super homing instinct. Once across the Nile, Rock could see Tutankhamun's bulls setting up into long triple lines along a concrete roadway that ran right up the side of the steep hill on the west side of the Aswan Dam. That road had been built up heavily to take even big service vehicles. There were walkways and multi-layered levels everywhere. Tutankhamun stood on his elephant, screaming out directions to his troops that Rock couldn't hear. But even from over a mile away, Rock's incredible vision saw the man's arms flap wildly and his gestures commanding entire battalions. The man was a great leader. There was no doubting that. Rock pulled out the old binocs that the elephant generals had dug up for him. Roxan could see the whole thing, as if it was some kind of miniature battle scene made out of clay far below him. The valley opening out as the mountains on each side slowly slanted downward as they drew away from the dam. The Nile extended far to the north. A band of green ran along each side. And there, about 3 miles off, the bait to lure Kilof. The elephant force, racing with everything it had back up the valley along the side of the river. As Roxan raised the glasses a little more, he saw a quick flash of brown sweep across his field of vision.
They found them!
A piece of rock the size of a subway car came slamming down on 3 or 4 of the spread out bait squad. When it rose up, there was just red and splintered bone where the beasts and men had been. All along the field of his glasses, the enemy was coming down the valley from both sides, on camel, on foot, even a contingent on some sort of levitated raft. But it was the ones in the very forefront, the first ranks of the moving camels, the riders holding the red anti-grav sticks, that Rock was interested in. He focused the glasses for a second and thought he spotted Kilof as a peaked hood fell from a gaunt, pale face. He swore he saw the skull staring back up at him and pointing at Qual. At that very instant, a huge boulder came down just yards from some of the other bait riders. This group more fortunately situated. Rock waited as planned, though it was agonizingly hard to do. They had to sucker the Kilaw forces into the valley, get them in trouble as much as possible, get them close to the dam, so there would be no way out, no way they'd miss the brunt of the crashing sea of water. But suddenly, waiting wasn't possible any longer.
Whoa, shit! They see us! We have to fire now!
But Rock saw that Tut and Kaplan's forces were already shooting up at the dam.
Everybody, fire!
The elephants all raised their trunks and fired out the laser rays blue and red, snapping with electric energy. The whole contingent of laser-equipped pachyderms shot, and 1,000 beams of the most aching blue the world has ever seen came instantaneously out of them. Between the Tutankhamun forces on both sides of the Nile, there were literally thousands of the crackling rays playing over the surface of the dam. It all didn't seem to be doing a damn thing, though.
Oh, no. Wait. We have to concentrate the power of the beams.
Fire exactly where I'm firing. We need to focus the energy.
The word was passed down the line, and within seconds, more and more of the blue beams were snapping into the same spot, just about dead center on the dam, the spot where Roxanne figured the greatest weight of water would be pressing in from the other side. Across the Nile, Tutankhamun saw what Rock had in mind and commanded his forces to do the same. Kilaw's forces were right down the river, just 500 yards off, closing in on the sacrifice force tearing along just in front of them. The concrete in the dead center of the dam began to glow, first orange, then white. It takes a lot of heat to make concrete melt, but the combined strength of 3,000 beams of laser energy was like a controlled thermonuclear explosion. Suddenly, the circle of heat was a good 20 feet wide and almost blue like the laser beams themselves. And then there was a crack. Kilov's forces stopped whatever they were doing in reaction to the sound. It was nothing at all like their own cacophony. All the men looked up as the spot that had been glowing erupted out of the face of the dam like a lava explosion. A burst of water came shooting out behind the spewing concrete pieces, under incredible pressure as it rushed through their circular 20-foot hole. And even as the elephants shut off their lasers, their riders gazed up to see the Nile's immense water pressure eating at the edges of the rapidly expanding hole. The wave roared out into the air like a thing alive, a twisting maelstrom of liquid which just seemed to expand out in every direction as it flew. Rock could see right away that it was going to take out some of the main force's elephants, too. Those who were on the lower rock ledges or concrete walkways across the river, below 500 feet elevation, might be in trouble.
Everybody, use the coil sticks! Hold back the water! Hold it all back!
I don't know how! Rocks are easy, but it's hard to push back water!
Well, you'll have 2 seconds to learn how!
Suddenly, the tidal wave, which had flown out a good 2,000 feet from the face of the high dam, came down in one immense wall a half mile on a side. Heroes and villains, everyone and everything in the flood's path instantly disappeared beneath the crushing waters. On both sides of the Nile, spreading back a mile, camels, riders, and thousands of infantry died as the water crashed down. And it was a far bigger slaughter than any of the mountains the Skull Man had raised up to kill. They all just vanished beneath the churning foam and twisting blackness. Their anti-grav sticks were sucked down, and boulders everywhere dropped from the sky as they regained their full weight, bounding down the slopes into the churning madness. The waters took all of it down, took them all as Moses had commanded the Red Sea to take the Pharaoh's chariots. Of such things are legends born.
I thank you for all you have done for me, Roxon. For all you have done for the planet.
Think nothing of it. I'd gladly do it all over again, just to see the look on Kilov's face before that tidal wave came.
Do you think he's finally dead?
I wish I could say yes. We spent hours scouring the area, but He didn't show up. The closest we came to finding him was a few shards of the Qual stick.
So, the nightmare is over?
For now, I guess.
What do you mean, for now?
Nothing could have survived that wall of water.
It's Kilov. If anybody did, I bet he did. No, the Qual sticks are broken and all those who knew how to use them are buried under a few billion gallons of water. This area of the place is safe, again. It's just a shame that your family's village had to die to wake us up to the horrors that were going on over here, Rahala.
I thank you for your condolences, Roxon. But it is a fact of life. Not until such tragedies hit home does one truly feel it. Perhaps, once peace has been achieved, humanity can set to work again on developing its sense of empathy.
Tell me about it. Hopefully, with your help, Moscow can put some pressure on the Soviet forces in America to let up a bit. I know that the peace conference was interrupted, but there are some places in the nation that are still under Red rule. Maybe if you spoke to Vasily.
I am very aware of the situation that still exists in America, Mr. Roxon. I have spoken to Grandfather many times on the subject, but I am afraid that his health has been very poor. Most of the actions that Vasily has done on the Americans' behalf were actually done by me.
By you? Are you saying...
I organized the whole trip, Roxon. Vasily knew nothing of it, but he signed it. I have learned over the years to both forge Grandfather's signature and imitate his voice. Do not be surprised if the next time you speak to the Premier of Russia, you are actually speaking to me.
You've been planning this for a long time, haven't you, Rahala?
I have been praying for peace all my life, Roxon. And in the meantime, I have been doing everything in my power to achieve it.
That's great, Rahala. Truly great. I also thank you once again for you fixing my arm upright. But I have one more question.
Yes, Mr. Sharansky.
How in the hell are we going to get out of here? I mean, the place isn't that bad once you're not keeling over from heat or having boulders thrown at you, but I'm starting to miss the cool interiors of Century City.
Ah, yes. I will have the Grandfather send a plane down here for your men to fly back. What kind did you use to get over here again?
An X-7.
But I never want to see that thing again. Damn thing practically killed us all.
I can definitely see that. I will have him send you an X-8. It has full computer control and all leather seats.
That sounds pretty good.
Consider it a gift from the Grandfather for all that you have done for me. It should be here tomorrow.
And in the meantime?
And in the meantime, we shall dance and eat through the night. And one more thing, Sharansky.
Yes?
I think you should have those nurses check up on your arm.
You know, that's exactly what I was thinking.
The raging water released by the dam continued to churn debris downriver like clothes in a washing machine. The currents put in play by the super tonnage of water rushed from bank to bank with bubbles and white water everywhere. Dead camels, troops of Kilov's army, a high priest here and there, white robe billowing out in the water, all floated by, bobbing up and down, spinning around in the mud-black river. A river of the doomed. Already, vultures roamed high in the sky in great arcing circles. Slowly, swooping down lower, as the vanquished began rolling up onto the shores of the Nile, snagging among the weeds, dragging onto stumps that jutted out. Crocodiles, vultures, ants, bugs, and beetles of every size and description began feeding on them, taking what was now theirs. In the midst of it all, a small figure floated half-submerged alongside a dead bloated camel. His gaunt face was hidden in the black waters that swirled around the slowly turning beast, whose white stomach was distorted and had risen up like dough in an oven. The submerged figure's eyes darted back and forth, continuously raking the waters for crocodiles. In one hand, he held a length of broken sword by the dull end of the blade. The other hand clutched the soaked, thick, hairy hide of the bloated animal's side, pressing close against the camel so he couldn't be seen. Colonel Kilov kicked slowly to keep from going under as he floated along, dead center in the river.
Damn it! I had been so close.
I had both sides of the power spectrum in my grasp. My armies were poised to sweep all of Africa, and then total and complete annihilation.
I now realize what a mistake it was to try and kill Roxanne slowly. I will devote the rest of my life to destroying
that man. Nothing else matters now, for I see that I will be unable to achieve anything unless that man is eliminated. Yes. That does make me feel better. I will kill him. Oh, how I will kill him. Will I strangle him? Pour acid on him. Oh, well, there are many ways that Ted Roxanne could die.
And in a bizarre way, Keyloth almost felt sort of happy as he fended off Crocs and lashed out at vultures that swung too low. As his dead camel slowly spun down the endless Black Nile, he realized that he had a reason to live. Doomsday Warrior. American Ultimatum. Adapted by Dan Smith. Directed by Johann Detweiler. Dialogue editing and sound design by Johann Detweiler. Narrated by James Konacek. With performances by David Coyne, James Konacek, Ken Jackson, James Lewis, Dylan Lynch, Terrence Azelfort, Tim Carlin, Nanette Savard, Karen Carbone, Thomas Penny, and Mort Shelby. Additional red shirts by The Dead Giveaways. Featuring music by Johann Detweiler and Dan Smith. Doomsday Warrior is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 1989, Ryder Sievertson. Production copyright 2008, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. If you enjoyed Doomsday Warrior, be sure to look for Jerry Ahern's The Survivalist and James Axler's Deathlands. Available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll also find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free screensavers, desktops, ringtones, and games.
The following previews are of Graphic Audio Productions, rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
I am the king who was.
Graphic Audio presents.
There have been major incidents at dozens of sites across the globe.
DC Comics.
A lot of deaths, a lot of damage.
The king who will be.
Justice League of America.
He's drawing his power from the planet itself.
Batman.
I am.
His aim is to destroy the world.
The Stone King.
What in the world could be strong enough to overcome?
Can we launch a full-scale assault?
Hera.
Come on, Wally, you can do this!
No, I won't allow it. I can't allow it.
It's impossible to keep flying. I'm going down.
There's no way. I'm gonna make it in time.
The cycle is ending. Make peace with your gods. Tonight, every last one of you will die.
Copyright DC Comics 2008. The Justice League of America, Batman, and all related names, characters, and elements are trademarks of DC Comics 2008. All rights reserved.
Coming soon from Graphic Audio. In the land of towering mountains and howling winds, the young man named Preacher has found a home. In the wilds, he has learned the rules of survival, and he has killed in order to live.
Two men began moving around each other warily, now entirely circled by people who had come from all over the rendezvous, drawn to the spectacle of a fight to the death. Bouchette moved in, raised his left hand as if to shield what he was going to do, then raised his knife hand to come in behind that shield. Bouchette moved his knife hand back down swiftly, as quickly as a striking snake, and thrust it toward Preacher. Preacher felt the knife burn as it opened a cut on his side, but he managed to twist away, barely avoiding the killing thrust. He responded with a quick counter thrust.
Oh, it's at the hell of a thing.
But now, something is forcing Preacher out of his Rocky Mountain range for the so-called civilized world. It is the memory of a woman, his first and only true love.
Before you left St. Louis, did you hear about Jenny getting killed?
Oh, heavens, yes. It was all anyone talked about for a while. It's a shame about her. Such a pretty young girl. Sometimes it seems like there's no justice anymore.
Oh, there'll be justice, all right. And the scales will be weighted with blood.
The murderer's bloody trail will lead Preacher from St. Louis eastward, with a stopover at his childhood home. But even the rekindled fire of family won't detain Preacher from his pursuit. And soon he'll arrive at the site of his blood vengeance, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, the city of brotherly love.
Your name is Theodore Epson?
It is. And you are?
Preacher.
Preacher?
That's all you need to know, Epson. Jenny was a friend of mine. In fact, she was a very special friend, if you get my meaning.
Jenny?
Yeah, Jenny. You remember her, I'm sure. She's a young lady you stole $950 from.
I did no such thing.
The hell you didn't. Both Mr. Ashley and Jenny gave you the money to pay off her mortgage, and you kept it.
There are no signed papers anywhere to support that claim. You would never be able to prove that in a court of justice.
You just don't understand, do you, Epson? I don't need to prove it. I only need to believe it. Because I'm the only justice you'll ever see.
What are you going to do?
Oh, I don't intend to do anything just yet. You're my bait.
Your bait?
I'm a fur trapper, Epson. I don't catch my quarry without using bait. Right now, my quarry's the man who killed Jenny. Things didn't work out quite the way he thought they would. So it's my bet he'll be looking you up. Since he's already in Philadelphia, all I have to do is keep an eye on you. Like I said, Epson, you're the bait.
Preacher's about to learn a hard lesson. For even the best laid plans of mice and mountain men often go awry.
Preacher raised his weapon. Remaining on his belly, Preacher crawled forward until he reached the body of the man he had just shot. Rolling him over, he saw that the man was dead. He also saw that it was not Ben Cavanaugh.
Did you get him? Scott, did you get him?
Shut up, Gray! The son of a bitch got Scott! Scott is dead!
Kelly, Gray, quit your jabbering and wait for a shot! Cavanaugh, I'm coming for you, Cavanaugh!
Come ahead, you son of a bitch!
Preacher saw his bullet strike sparks as it hit a rock. He knew at once that he hadn't killed Cavanaugh. The best he could have done was to send shards of bullet or rock into him. That was painful, but certainly not fatal.
Kelly, he's already fired twice. Unless he's carrying a whole bag of guns, he's got nothing left.
Let's get him!
Suddenly, two men jumped up from their place of concealment, no more than 30 feet in front of Preacher. Preacher filled his hands with his two knives. He waited until they had closed within 10 feet, then suddenly stood up in front of them.
There he is!
Here I am!
Don't miss one action-charged minute of William W. Johnstone's The First Mountain Man 10, Preacher's Justice. Available soon in graphic audio.
In The Last Gunfighter, number 2, Reprisal, Frank Morgan is trying to stay out of trouble.
Marshal, met up with a young fella wandering around on the trail. He's from New York City, first time out here. Was lost as a goose. I told him he could ride along with me. That's all there is to my being here.
I believe you, Morgan, but it still puts you here. You know I reckon about the bounty on your head.
I know.
But you're still gonna stay here in Durango?
I am.
I figured you'd say that. How long you gonna be in town, Morgan?
Quite a spell.
I figured you'd say that, too. Well, I reckon I'd better tell the Undertaker to get ready for some business. Pretty damn good fight.
Stop this!
They're fighting over you, Collie, not me.
You unwashed lout! I'll teach you a lesson!
How you teach me anything when I shove your head up your ass!
But when Frank and his new friend find themselves in the same town as his estranged son, Conrad, it doesn't take long for trouble to start. Once a little trouble starts brewing, it can quickly become a hot mess that doesn't care who gets burned.
Clarence Rushing is my full name. Yeah, I've been up in these mountains so long, the other gold pan has hung the tin pan handle on me. Suits me just fine.
I like tin pan. A hell of a lot easier on the ears.
You was a gunfighter?
For a time. Gave it up years ago. Tried to live peaceful. Running a few cows. Minding my own business on a little place down south.
Sounds like your past caught up to you if you're about to tangle with Ned Pine and his gang.
They took my son. Pine and an owl hoot named Victor Van Bergen set out to settle old scores against me.
I heard about this Van Bergen. Word is he's got a dozen hard cases in his gang. Rob banks and trains. I didn't even know they was this far north.
They're here. I've trailed them a long way.
Frank, have you gone plumb loco to set out after so many gun slicks?
Maybe. My mom always told me something wasn't right inside my head from the day I was born. She said I had my daddy's mean streak bred into me.
Yeah, well, a mean streak don't sound like enough to handle that many.
Maybe it ain't. But I damn sure intend to try. I won't let them hold my son for ransom without a fight.
I say we kill the little bastard and get clear of this cold country.
We're not leaving until Frank Morgan is dead.
Who's gonna kill him, Ned? We ain't had much luck trying it so far.
We'll join up with Victor at Gypsum Gap and hunt him down like a dog.
Being outnumbered don't seem to bother Morgan all that much.
Are you taking Morgan's side?
I'm not taking any side but my own. My main purpose now is to stay alive.
The Last Gunfighter Number 2, Reprisal. Make your move and pick it up now, or it may just come looking for you.
If you can't find that hot graphic audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.